traveling the world searching for equestrians of all breeds. The journey starts now on the International Equine Network.
Hey,
good afternoon.
Scott. Good afternoon, Steve Wolf. I'm here. Scott Miller's here at Sunshine Meadows, and we're ready for another edition of Flying Turns. Scott, we got an awful lot of stuff happening lately.
You know it. This is the best time of year, Steve, because, you know, like you were telling us, the Dan Patch Awards are coming up. You know, the journey starts for all the big horses that are trying to get to the Jug and the Breeders' Crown and the Hamiltonian. So fill us in, Steve. You're on top
That's
of
right.
all this. Where are you going to be tomorrow?
Well, tomorrow I'm heading to Orlando, and I'm not going to Disney. But we're heading to the Rosen Shingle Creek Resort, which is a five-star hotel, because on Sunday, it's the, I want to say, 68th annual Dan Patch Awards, where we're going to honor the top trotters and pacers in harness racing in North America, plus some of the great equine heroes. Our Hall of Fame inductees will be introduced for the first time up on the podium. It's actually a night of nothing but awards. There's almost 44 awards we're going to be giving away, but with top MCs Roger Houston and Jason Settlemore, they're going to keep everybody on their toes. It's going to be exciting, and if you're not able to make it to this dinner, which is probably the biggest gala event of the year in harness racing, you'll be able to watch it live on the U.S. Harness Writers Association Facebook page or via the USTA's YouTube page. But Scott, the big thing that's going to happen on Sunday night is they will announce the Trotter of the Year, the Pacer of the Year, and the Harness Horse of the Year. And it's still a toss-up all the way around.
Well, you know, in past years, Steve, it's been fairly close. One or two votes have made a difference, haven't they?
Exactly. In fact, what I think is going to happen here, I wouldn't be surprised if a horse emerged that we didn't even think about. Everyone talks about, of course, Better's Wish. He made $1.6 million. He started 19 times, 14 wins, 3 seconds and a third. I mean, he was tops in the game. But in the open mare pacing division, we have the great world champion Chartnan. She won 14 straight races, 15 on the season. She took a record of 146-4, which made her at the time tied for the third fastest mile in the history of harness racing. She's the fastest mare ever known, and she's got a shot to be Pacer of the Year and Harness Horse of the Year. But as I said before, those two horses could actually nullify each other with the votes, and someone like maybe for Trotter of the Year, like someone like Green Shoe, who had a sensational season, he could emerge the victor. He could actually win Trotter of the Year and Harness Horse of the Year and surprise everybody. But in fact, back in 2014, there was an undefeated two-year-old filly by the name of J.K. She's a Lady. She was trained by Nancy Tactor, and she got a lot of votes, but she did not win Pacer of the Year. But when they announced Harness Horse of the Year, and it was J.K. She's a Lady because the votes got split between the other trotters and pacers, that could happen again.
Well, you know one thing that really, I think, really interesting is, you know, how do you, you know, speak for your horse? How do you promote your horse? You know, not only do you have to win, you know, but you got to be out there, you know, on the stump, thumping on, you know, your horse saying, hey, maybe it's
You're absolutely right. And throughout the year, the harness writers, of which there's approximately 200 members, but 150 have voting privileges. And when you end up having a division that's won by one or two votes, you know, the trainers and drivers themselves are talking with the media people. So, of course, they're going to say, you know, my horse is the best. and you have to look at it that way. But other than, you know, taking ads out and things like that, I mean, there's some campaigns to try and get Horse of the Year done. It's not like the old days where they used to send the media guys presents and things like that in hopes. You know what? I didn't even get a calendar this year, which, yeah, I know. I'm lost. I didn't even realize today was Thursday until you called me earlier. But it's going to be interesting. What I think is most interesting is that one of the horses, Charton N, the top pacing mare, I mean, we're talking about races from last year. Well, yesterday, she qualified at Dover Downs. She won by a head in a three-horse photo, but she won the race in 151-2 in a qualifier. So it looks like she's primed to come back again.
Man, I tell you, you know, it takes a lot to bring a horse back, like that. I don't see how they do it, but, you know, we're looking at Wiggle and Jiggle It. You know, look how they brought him back. Off a long way off, and now maybe they've done the same here.
Well, with Wiggle and Jiggle It, he's had injuries plaguing him throughout his career, and he overcame them. And he overcame them in such a way that he was voted Harness Horse of the Year. But it's been a couple of years now, and he has one win, I think, in six tries. He's finished last a couple times. He's not the same horse he ever was, but being a gelding, they're trying to do everything they can to keep him racing because he's got a lot of value and he's still of an age that he can be competitive. Whereas Charton N is relatively young in the racing world. She's seven now. So she theoretically, if she keeps up as she is, she may even go faster than 146 and four this year, which would be amazing. I mean, this could very well be the greatest pacing mare, you know, that we've ever seen. And it is. You're right. It's a tip of the hat to trainer Jim King Jr. for what he's done, and Joanne Looney and keeping this mare going so strong.
Well, that's what I like about these award dinners, you know, and things of this nature. You know, the thing that excites me really more than any of the other stuff is Roger Houston being there.
That guy is
phenomenal.
And we're going to have him on the show.
Yep. It's phenomenal. Now, you know, he not only, you know, was great for the harness, but he also was a thoroughbred guy, too.
Yes. He's called almost every type of race you can imagine. Thoroughbreds, quarter horses, dog races. I don't know if he's ever called a highline match, but I'll ask Roger about that. Maybe we can arrange it for him if he wants to come down here and give it a try. And Roger's called all over the world. He's called in Australia. He's called in Europe. He's called in the United Kingdom and Ireland. I mean, the only place I think he hasn't called a race is in Bermuda. But again, that could change too. Roger's getting all over the place.
Yeah. Well, you know, Steve, the thing of it is about the business is everybody works hard to get it from the caretakers to the track personnel to, you know, everybody. And it's a good time of the year to recognize the people that have, you know, got to the top.
Right. Let me say something. There is a gentleman out there. Actually, it's a man and his wife. His name is Chris Coyle. He was a very, very, you know, renowned caretaker of some world-class horses. But he has, for the last 10 years, had his farm in North Carolina, Olive Branch, and all the leading trainers in racing fight to turn their horses out with him. Because him and his wife, they take such good care for, you know, the couple months that these horses are turned out. They, you know, if there's any injuries they have, they seek them. They get the horse in an atmosphere where it is totally relaxed. I mean, you're turned out, and this horse is just resting up. And when they come back to the racetrack, they are so fit, it's easier for the trainers, you know, to get them ready. And that's a key point. When, you know, people say, oh, I'm going to turn them out. you put the horse in the field. It's not that simple. You've got to tend to the horse's problems. I mean, the horse may still need to get rubbed down or have its leg bandages or anything, and Chris Coyle does that, and that's why every year his place is booked solid for the winter months. And he's a tribute to an awful lot of world champions coming back and racing so well.
Well, you know, that's like here at Sunshine Meadows. We do have some older horses here, but for the most part, we're just the opposite. We get all the, you know, all the babies. They break the babies here, and, you know, they get them going, and they turn them out. And on Saturday mornings out here, on the deck, it's interesting to just be around and hear the owners talking about, you know, who they think is going to do what, you know, where they're going to go, you know, what's the road for them. And then, you know, they have some that, you know, that just they know aren't going to make it, you know. They go back to the sell them or, you know, make other, you know, accommodations for them.
No, you're right. And it's big decisions. And a lot of it has to do, Scott, with the stake payments. In other words, this past weekend, the 15th of February, you know, being on a weekend, they have an extra day to mail in the entries. But a lot of nominations, you know, tens of thousands of dollars are being spent by these stables to keep horses eligible. So they're going to work them a little bit more in the coming months because February 15th payments are cheap compared to March 15th and then the April 15th payments. I mean, you're talking anywhere from $10,000 to $25,000 per horse, a two-year-old to be nominated to keep eligible to all the major stake races.
Well, you know, it was literally a flip of the coin last Saturday. I don't know which horse it was, but I was privy to some information, and they were trying to decide whether to stake this horse or not. And long story short, they flipped the coin. You know, and
really,
and it came out to where, you know, they weren't going to stake the horse. And then, you know, a few days later, you know, the horse came up with a little sore ankle. And, you know, it was recommended that they turn the horse back out to the farm, you know, and let it get some rest and let it grow some. So, you know, that was pretty good. That was pretty good. And you see this happen quite often, you know, in the thoroughbreds as well as the standardbreds. It makes it very difficult, you know, to stake a horse. And then, you know, like this horse, for example, if they would have staked it, that money would have just been gone. That would have been
right.
Gone.
Yep, it's very difficult. I know there was a top three-year-old trotting filly who, our pacing filly, was supposed to race at Dover the other day and was scratched lame. And I happened to be with Myron Bell at the time and heard him talking with the trainer. And the decision right there before the February 15th payments was to turn her out and she's going to become a brood mare. No more trying to race her anymore. And they're doing the right thing by the horse instead of just, you know, trying to get it going and have it have a bad season that will reflect on her. Now they're just going to say, you know, injured and bred and, you know, off her two-year-old season. I mean, the horse made her money back, about $150,000. And, you know, they had hopes for her, but sometimes, you know, it's the horse business. It doesn't always work out.
Well, you know, maybe, you know, we're talking about, Dan Patch, you know. Who is Dan Patch?
Dan Patch, in my mind, is probably one of the top five pacing horses of all time in history. People really don't, of course, they don't remember him because he raced in the 1900s. But he was so fast that other horses eventually, nobody would race against him. And they campaigned the horse around the country. He had his own train with his own, boxcar that was his stall. And his winter training headquarters in Minnesota, they built it and made it an indoor ring, so that he could jog all the time. But in a time trial, he was clocked in 1:55 and 4 and that was in 1905. And that record stood for over 50 years before another horse could come. And Dan Patch became such a household name back then that at some of the fairs, they drew as many as 90 to 100,000 people to come watch him time trial, because that's all he could do. And they would have prompters, thoroughbreds, hooked up to jog carts that would run alongside and prompt him, you know, to go as fast as he could. And everybody would come out to see if he could break the track record or the world record for that matter. And my understanding is that Mr. Savage that owned Dan Patch, he didn't want any purse money. He was just going to race him. And all he asked for was for a dollar a head for the people that bought in to come to the fair. And yet, now you have to realize back then that if they had 90,000 people, then he got paid $90,000 in the 1900s. And apparently he made the equivalent of millions of dollars at that time, you know, racing Dan Patch around. In fact, he became so famous that they named a sleds after him. There was a Dan Patch washing machine. There were all sorts of implements that would pay Mr. Savage the right. You know, there was Dan Patch horse feed and Dan Patch harnesses. And I mean, it was unbelievable how great this horse was.
Well, starting tomorrow on IENTV.org, I'm going to replay the Dan Patch movie. And
okay,
you know, a lot of people love that. And there's one scene in it where the train is going out through the Midwest. It's like in Oklahoma, and there's a man and a woman and his kid are staying way off in the distance just to see the train go by with Dan Patch on it.
With Dan,
They stopped the train so the kids and the people could walk over and see the horse, and then it continued on. That's how great that horse is.
Wow, that's impressive. In fact, I even have a flip book, which they did back then because they were just barely had movies. So a flip book, they just kept taking pictures of Dan Patch, and then they would put them on each page of the book. So when you flipped it, you could see him racing down the stretch.
Oh man, that's just amazing. What else do we have in the awards that might be surprising this year?
Well, I guess on the trotting side, I'm so convinced that Green Shoe is going to win the Trotter of the Year. I don't know if there's anyone else in that category other than maybe Atlanta, who, you know, was the Hamiltonian winner. And she did pretty good at four. She wasn't great, and she only won by two votes for older trotting mare over Manchego. But you never know that, you know, when you're the defending harness horse of the year, and you make almost $1 million and have all these wins and you do pretty good, there could be a chance. I mean, it all depends on the voters. But I think it's between the three horses and the two pacers, Sharton and Better's Wish, are both viable candidates, and of course Green Shoe, and I think they're the three that we're going to watch, because all the other divisions, you know, they already announced who the winners are, and they kept the, I guess this year they did keep the best for last. But there's other things going on. I mean, when we were talking about stake races before, and of course, in talking about the Dan Patch Awards, again, a reminder, go to the U.S. Harness Writers Facebook page, and you'll be able to watch it live. I believe the dinner starts at about 7 o'clock, and you'll be able to watch everything live. That is going to be great. They're going to have red carpet. You'll be seeing interviews with all the award winners by Heather Vitale and Heather Wilder. They'll be there doing Facebook Live. But when you were talking about the stake races before, the announcement just came out this morning about a brand new race up at Woodbine Racecourse, Woodbine Mohawk Racecourse. It's called the Mohawk Million, and it's going to be for two-year-old trotters. It's going to be held on Saturday, September 26th, and it's $1 million purse for 10 horses. But what makes this a little bit different is that they follow the pattern, I guess, for the Pegasus Thoroughbred, and they opened up 9 of the 10 post positions for bidders to enter. And the price is $110,000 to get in. You know, $55,000 had to be put up by 9 a.m. this morning. And believe it or not, 9 or more owner interests put in for it. All the slots are filled. We don't even know if it was 10 or 11. And if it is, they'll have a drawing to see who the 9 are. The 10th position is given to the winner of the Wellwood Memorial Trot, which is held at Woodbine the week before the million. So there's a lot of excitement. People want to know, who's been able to put up that kind of money. Plus, in this situation, if you're one of those 9 people, you're willing to risk putting up that money, then you have the right at any time to sell part of that. Or let's say there's a really good trotter who's not eligible to the William Wellwood, but he's good enough that he should go in the million-dollar race. Well, then I'm going to take my slot and say, hey, Scott, you got this really good trotter there. I'm willing to give you my slot as long as I get my $110,000 back. And if he wins, we're going to split the money in half.
Now, I mean, let me ask you this. Can you lease part of that or all of it?
Absolutely. You can lease it. You can set it up under any contract you like.
It's going to be interesting.
So, I mean, I'm sorry I didn't bring this up to you sooner, because if you had the $55,000, to put up front, we could maybe find some other people to back it the rest of the way.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Well, you think that this is going to be a trend that might lead to going to other racetracks, like to the Meadowlands or Yonkers or something like that?
I actually don't know. My feeling is that I didn't know if this race was going to sell all the slots, and obviously it did. So it's going to be a go. It's all set and everything was ready. Do I think it's going to spread? I don't know. We're going to have to wait and see how everything goes, because it's an awful lot of money, just as the Pegasus. I mean, I don't know. How much does it cost to get into the Pegasus?
It's changed over the last few years. It used to be $1 million to get in.
Right, to get in.
And now they've reduced it down.
Right. So here they're starting at $110,000, but they got them. I mean, and that's what counts. I mean, the people were willing to put the money up and go for it. So, they say it's not a poor man's game. And when it comes to events like this, they're absolutely right. But because of the way they do syndicates now, the way, 4 or 5 people, can say to them, hey, look, you each put up $25,000. We're going to get a slot and hopefully we'll find a good horse that's not eligible that, we can make a deal with. I mean, it's a risk. It's a risk that can pay off big time. I mean, it's $1 million purse.
That sounds something like that might go on the deck over there. Omar might get over there and get him a couple syndicates together and get into something like this.
You never know. I mean, and that's what makes it exciting. It's something different, that we credit Gulfstream for coming up, I think, with it first. I've never seen it at this aptitude. But there's a lot of new things, a lot of different things or older ideas that are coming back to life again. I mean, just look at the Adriano Sorello that we had on here and his horse Jimmy Freight, and how he's made a deal. And there's going to be a $100,000 race just for the foals of Jimmy Freight in 2 years. And now there's going to be $20,000 in breeder award incentives. So whether you can make that race or not with Jimmy Freight, if you breed to him and your horse does well, you can get an extra chunk of that 20,000 on top of it.
Right. Well, you know, the way racing's tending to go and everything, I see, you know, on the card that day, the Metro Pace, you know, that's a nice race there.
There you go.
There's a lot of money out there. $2.5 million that day, I believe.
Right, right. They had a huge card. The Metro goes for about $800,000. You know what? But you all have to have an awful lot of luck. You gotta have a horse that's going to be able to go the distance as a two-year-old, and that's never an easy thing.
Yeah. You know, business is tough. And there's another thing that I was going across my desk the other day. It was about Bob Quigley. You know, a racing executive, really good
yes.
for the game. You know, very
yes.
sad to see that passing.
No, Bob Quigley, I mean, I don't think there's anyone out there that, if they knew Bob Quigley, could not had only good words to say about him. I mean, he was a real gentleman. A real innovator in the sport. He was the very first executive at the Meadowlands Racetrack when it first opened. And he helped put together a team of people that made the Meadowlands the number one track in all of harness racing and a powerhouse for thoroughbreds, too. And then after years of working there, when Bob Brennan came out, he came out and set up Garden State Park, and he got Bob Quigley to leave the Meadowlands and come there. And what's the first thing they do is they make a deal and get spend a buck to skip the Triple Crown to go race there in their what's it I don't know which Derby it is, but
it was the Jersey Derby,
yeah. which went for $1 million, and there was a bonus. If you won the Kentucky Derby and the Jersey Derby, you got another $1 million. And
right.
Bob Quigley was right there in the forefront, convincing him
right.
to skip it and come race by him, and he did it. So Bob Quigley was quite an innovator. He was at Atlantic City. And,
yeah. Oh, yeah, the Atlantic City. That's what I was reading about, you know, how he started out as a laborer. It just shows you. Any business you go into, if you work hard, he started out as a laborer, and then look where he ended up.
Exactly. I mean, unbelievable. And he's in both the Thoroughbred and the Harness Racing Hall of Fame, and, of
yeah.
course, it's well-deserved. I've had the pleasure of knowing him since 1977, and he actually, in his final years, was living down here right by Gulfstream Park. So I was fortunate every year to see him, you know, a few times. But, you know, sadly, he did reach the age of 90, which is, we can only hope, Scott, we can make it that long. And he's going to be sorely missed in the industry. A good guy.
I don't know if I want to get it and we'll make it to 90.
What do you mean? You know, you may not have a choice, my friend.
I know.
The lifestyle you lead. Come on now. Yeah.
That'd be my luck. Oh, well, Steve, I tell you, now we got everything going. And tell us again about the date and the time for the award, the Dan Patch, and where it's at this weekend.
Okay. It's taking place at Rosenshingle Creek in Orlando, Florida. I think there's still some tickets around. It's not a cheap one. It's about $180 per ticket. But what a dinner it's going to be. And everything will be on the Harness Writers, United States Harness Writers Facebook page, also on the U.S. Trotting Association's YouTube page. You know, they'll have it too. So I'm just trying to think here at the looking here for the times. Okay, the Facebook live shows with Heather Vitale and Heather Wilder, that begins at 5:30 and goes until 6:30. And then by 7 o'clock is when the awards dinner will begin.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, it's going to be hard to recognize a lot of the trainers and drivers because they all get cleaned up so well in their suits and gowns and everything else. It's going to be a great affair. I know that the after parties, starting on I guess starting tomorrow night is going to go pretty good. I know last year I think the hotel came and tried to shut them down at 2 a.m. and it still went on till like 3:30.
Yeah.
And I think the rage for ice and things like that, the hotel's well aware of us now. It's our third season, and they know. We have two suites, actually, adjoining suites, plus the outside patio area to hold everybody. But they are just great, great affairs. And the only thing I don't look forward to is I'm usually on cleanup detail, which means I got to get up Monday morning and go help clean those rooms up.
Well, let me ask you something.
Sure.
What you just said. You said the after party starts tomorrow and the party's not until Sunday.
No. The dinner is on Sunday. But yes, the party starts once we get the hospitality area stocked, then the party begins. So for the Harness Rider members that are there, that's for Friday and Saturday night. And then Sunday night, it's the big, you know, it'll be the big blow up. So you're getting rewarded for sitting through the dinner. You can go and, what do you call it? You can go to the after party and really live it up. But you have to realize something. It is a very tough life that we have and the horsemen and horsewomen live. I mean, 7 days a week, these animals need to be cared for. And the best care you can give them is going to be rewarded when they go to the racetrack. So these people work really hard. And when they have a chance to let themselves come down and enjoy themselves at an event like this, it's just super.
Oh, you're exactly right. And, you know, that's why on the International Equine Network here, we started out, you know, with flying turns, which you and I worked on years ago at Freehold. And you know, now we're at the Wire, which is our Kentucky Derby, you know, watch list and our Breeders' Cup watch list for the thoroughbreds end of it. And so that's what we're trying to do, is get that thing going right, you know. And the whole network is going to start evolving now. One of the shows I'm looking forward to is called Chuck Wagon. It's going to be about the equestrians and how they, you know, eat and live on the show circuit, the racetracks, you know, that type of thing. It'd be pretty good.
Oh, it's going to be great, and I can't wait to hear her soon. Another item I need to bring up, we got a release out today on Harness Link from Dover Downs. The race secretary is seeking any free-for-all horses or free-for-all fillies and mares, because they're going to be offering two $50,000 races, free-for-all. And they are going to be on the horses and geld, the fillies and mares race for their $50,000 on Wednesday, March 4th. And the horses and geldings will contest theirs on Thursday, March 5th. So anyone that's got, and I'm sure that Chardonnay is going to headline that $50,000 race for the fillies and mares, or the horses. It all depends on who wants to come down. But it's awful nice when you start offering $50,000 races on your card.
Oh, who do they contact to get into that? See,
they have to contact the race. They can call me. I'll take their entry. Put them in at Dover Downs, the race office. The phone number there is 302-674-4600. Just ask for the race office, and I'm sure, you know, most of the people that have a horse of that caliber. I mean, Dover Downs is pretty good. They run their Blue Hen Special for the Delaware-owned. That usually goes for around $30,000. And then they have their weekly preferred invitational handicap. That goes for about $32,000. So they're up in the stakes. And for this time of year, there's no other tracks that are, except maybe Yonkers, that's even offering close to, you know, $50,000 races. So it'll be interesting to see. The other day at Pocono Downs, a world-class horse. Of course he's world-class, because now I can't remember. Western Fame is his name. And he was the winner of the Confederation Cup. He won the Prix de Tay. He's been a free-for-aller. He just qualified at Pocono Downs and won 50 in a piece. So I think he's going to get ready, and he'll be in that $50,000 race. What I'd love to see is I'd love to see Chardonnay try and go against the male horses. I think she can beat them.
For all of our thoroughbred friends, what is a free-for-aller?
A free-for-aller means that this is a horse of the highest class. In other words, he can only race in either opens or invitationals. You know, and so that's why they call it a free-for-all. In other words, it's free for all that are eligible. And usually it's followed up by invitation only, or, you know, depends on how much lifetime earnings they have. It depends on how well the horse has been racing as of late. Sometimes they're going to give a younger horse a shot against the older horses and see what happens. But unless they're ready, it usually doesn't fan out. Like you probably won't see a three-year-old, you know, go in the free-for-all ranks until the end of his three-year-old season. So, we're looking at the 4, 5, up to 7, 8-year-old. I mean, of course, the best free-for-aller there ever was Foyle Again, you know, who won $7.5 million in 100 races in his career. And most of them were in invitational stakes or free-for-all events.
Well, you know, people don't understand in the training as is in the thoroughbreds. And, you know, like you're trying to get to the Kentucky Derby, there's a process to doing that. You know, and if you can get a horse to that level, to where you're racing that kind of competition, you know, that makes a difference in the purse money that horse, you know, potentially can earn. You know, and I think it would be exciting, you know, for Flying Turns to highlight maybe those races, one race a week, you know, that we can highlight, you know, if we can, and to follow these horses to the end of the year.
Sure. And what's happening is, and this is a smart move by Dover to get these horses to come and down and race there, is that in a few weeks they're going to start the Levy Series, which is now, I believe, the MGM Grand Series at Yonkers Raceway. And that's going to be, that's for free-for-all horses, and they have the Blue Chip Farm Matchmaker Series for the mares. But in that series, each division, each elimination division, races for 5 weeks. The purse is $50,000 every week, and the final goes for about $500,000. So that's what Dover's doing. Dover's saying, hey, come down to us and race, you know, and get prepared for the Levy and the Matchmaker, and they'll get the highlight and have some big days. But then we'll be able to cover Yonkers Raceway, because on average, they get three divisions for the colt or for the horses every week. I mean, that's like 24 free-for-allers, you know, racing every week, you know, for 5 weeks for $50,000 a pop. And you have to race in at least two of the legs in order to be in the final. You would have to do that anyway and win, because 1 year Wiglet Jiglet, he won a division. He finished in a dead heat in a division. But he wasn't eligible for the final. He was like AE2 and didn't, you know, had to go into consolation where he won. But he very well could have won the final too. But you know what? He was late coming together, so he only had the two starts. Well, you have to earn the points.
Well, you know, having the free for all, you know, things like that. It's kind of like International Equine Network. What we're going to be doing is going to each sport, you know, in the horse industry. And, you know, it's kind of amazing that system that they have for the standard breds. It's almost identical to what they have for the horse show horse industry on Quest for Equine Gold. You know, they have competitions, you know, of that nature, and the money system amazing. You know, like at Wellington, some of these shows are going for $300,000-$400,000 and up, you know, every Saturday, like Saturday Night Lights out at Wellington, which is all show horse jumping. And,
yeah, because this,
you know,
this
one
time
thing I like about our industry is we can always find something equine somewhere.
My understanding is Wellington is this is peak time, Scott?
Right. It is, and it's kind of interesting. You know, with all the shows that are going, BZ Madden it will be riding all year long. Sarah Lockman, gold medal, are going for the Olympics. You know, for the gold medal, she'll be there. You know, it's the top end here, you know, in South Florida. The next thing that they have called the Desert Classic out west is comparable to it. Ocala
right.
has Hits, which is, you know, comparable to Wellington. You know, it's just amazing that the money that's out there, the entertainment that's there, you know, same thing with the Thoroughbreds, you know, on the road to the Derby.
Absolutely. And you bring up the Olympics, which reminded me, I saw just yesterday a release from Bermuda that their top equestrian rider has been invited to compete in the Olympics. So, you know, which is a big thing for that little island to have, you know, a leading contender who happens to be training in the Wellington area. But
right.
So the letters are going out. And and I can't, I just,
go ahead. Sorry.
Well, I was going to say, how hard is it on a horse who's competing here in Wellington to have to pick up and go to Japan and compete
right.
in the Olympics?
Right. Well, you know, we're going to have a representative from the Duda Corporation. Tim Duda flies horses all over the world and has for a long time. He's the best outfit in the world, and he does the majority of the Olympic horses. And we're going to have him on in the coming weeks to tell us about how they get to, you know, to fly them over and, you know, all the different ones that they have. And it's really interesting. On some of those planes, they've had like the first, second, and third, you know, place finishers right across from each other themselves, you know, on the plane. And, and that's interesting. We're going to have a feed company, Hallway Feeds. We're going to be talking about how they feed horses all over the world, you know. So when they leave the States, you know, that bag of Hallway Feed goes with them and you know, stays with them. You know, so those are the kind of things that we want to talk about. We want to start inviting, you know, our listeners to come out to you know, to the races, go to Yonkers and Meadowlands, you know, go to Pompano, Churchill, Keeneland, you know, that type of thing. It's a good entertainment.
And Gulfstream. I know that when we used to have the Harness Riders National meetings here in Florida, that mm-hmm. people would make arrangements, even though they're harness people, they would make arrangements to fly in, so they get in around 11 o'clock, and they get a rent-a-car, and they drive right to Gulfstream Park and catch the afternoon card, and then go check into their hotel. That's how big it is for thoroughbreds.
Yeah. Well, at Gulfstream, and a lot of the thoroughbred tracks are starting to come out Gulfstream, they've got shopping, they've got from, you know, hamburgers to the, you know, five-star dining, you know, and it's starting to happen on the show circuit and in the thoroughbred and all of the harness industry. Everybody's starting to, you know, come up with the different, you know, cuisine, you know, like, at time for the Kentucky Derby, you're talking about Kentucky burger and you're talking about barbecue. You know, you get up for the Preakness and you're talking about Maryland crab cakes and seafood. You know, you get the Gulfstream, you can get anything there. And that's what we're trying to, you know, get out to our listeners. You know,
it is.
Take part in
food's important. We got to eat.
Yeah.
We might as well make it something good. And that's why I'm excited to get the Chuck Wagon show underway.
Me too. I'm ready for that. You know, I just got to thinking about it. you know, eventually we're going to have 10 different programs on IEM, and we got to have a drink and a food for every program. So I'm excited about that. And hopefully we'll get people to start calling in and, you know, emailing us, you know, about where we're at, where we're going, and what we're doing. One thing that a lot of the equestrians are getting into now is the Keystone Montana trailers. And we have the 3701 front kitchen, or rear kitchen, which is really nice. It has a household refrigerator in it, you know, stove, oven, that type of thing. So it makes it good for the equestrian, you know, out on the road. Because I'm telling you, hotel rates are just ridiculous now. You know, it's
right.
Totally ridiculous. And, you know, you can get a nice Keystone Montana for, you know, about a few hundred dollars a month, opposed to spending a few hundred dollars for a weekend for a hotel room, you know.
No, you're absolutely right. And that way you can do it all yourself and be self-contained and cook up them special dishes. I see on the Harness Racing food page on Facebook, which always makes me hungry and want to eat.
Let's see.
We'll have to get our own chuck wagon.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, well, you know, eventually we will end up, well, we will with the Keystone Montana. It'll be a modern-day chuck wagon, not like they had before.
I need a microwave at least, that's for sure.
Well, they got a nice microwave in there, you know.
I believe it.
Yeah.
And we have our guest coming on soon?
I think so. I don't know if they've called yet or not. They're trying to get through, I guess. You know, so.
Finally get through.
Are you there?
I'm here.
Patricia, you got through.
Yeah,
all right.
I got through.
Yeah, what's your question, Patricia? What can we tell you about Chuck Wagon?
I was listening to the show today, and I'm really interested to hear, Scott, this question for you. When's the Chuck Wagon going to be debuting on the International Equine Network?
On March the 19th. That's going to be our date. It's a few days, it's actually a week before the Florida Derby.
Right.
And also, you know, we'll be there on March the 19th. All right, yeah. Now, you're an equestrian. How did you start your days off in the barn?
Yeah, I started showing and riding at age 8. And every weekend, Saturday, Sunday, sometimes it's a long weekend, and you don't have much time. And, you know, growing up being a fitness professional, I find that, you know, it's important to eat healthy. And the equestrian's a athlete also. We got to think about ourselves,
right,
too. And how many times did you just jump in the truck and you're, like, drinking your coffee and you forget about yourself? You know, like the horses, and then you're, you know, suddenly noon, you're like, geez, I forgot to eat. So my go-to thing is, like, the night before, you can freeze this, get just a regular plastic cup, put yogurt in the bottom, vanilla yogurt, cut up some strawberries, blueberries, and bananas. That's the next layer. Put the granola next, some granola, and make sure you sprinkle some flaxseed. And then put, like, some aluminum foil or plastic with a rubber band over the top, and you can throw it in your freezer if you want. Grab it, put it in your car, and by the time you get to the show, it's probably thawed out, and there you go.
Yeah.
Nice little
breakfast. A lot of people, they don't realize that, you know, that the riders and the trainers and everybody, you know, they're athletes because it's such a hard on you during the day. You know, it's hard to get that lunch or that breakfast or, you know,
right,
anything like that. Now, at the shows, what did you have for breakfast, you know, when you got to the shows?
If you didn't bring anything and you counted on what was available at the show?
Yeah.
You mean? Is that what you mean? Like, yeah, at the showgrounds,
yeah,
where you...
Yeah.
Well, you know how easy it is to grab a candy bar or a bag of chips, but, you know, really that's not, like, the best thing for you. We realize that now. I see at shows sometimes they'll have a sandwich. They'll have apples. You know, that's, like, a better option than grabbing something like that.
Right.
I know it's so easy to grab the donut, but.
Well, see, that's why we're starting Chuck Wagon, you know, with Keystone, Montana, to, you know, make available, you know, good nutrition for, you know, for the athletes or for the people there. You don't have to worry about running
right.
out anywhere, you know, having enough change or whatever, you know, that type of thing. So that's what we're going to try to do on Chuck Wagon is, you know, get a good, you know, like a brunch, you know, type thing, get a good breakfast to start you off, you know, good lunch, you know, and then at nighttime, you know, have a good meal, you know, that, you know, that type of thing. Yeah, have you got any ideas
right.
what we could do for, like, say, a good brunch?
A brunch?
Yes.
Like something that you can pack and take with you, or something that might that the shows might
well,
start offering?
It
we
would show your culinary skills. It'll show us your culinary skills.
Pack and take with you? Well, you know, if you're going to be there a couple days and you're going to bring, like, the grill,
right.
But there's little mini grills that you can put in your truck. They make it so easy now to keep and clean, and you can grill up, you know, some chicken breasts and have in your cooler, you know, salad, something that's very easy, you know, and you spice up chicken breasts, even have a hamburger.
Yeah, you can do that. Hey, I tell you what, maybe we can get you on our March 19th show. And that first program we're going to do for Chuck Wagon is going to be how to stock your RV and how to buy, you know, and prepare snacks for your first show, for, you know,
right.
your first
well,
RV
that would
show.
That would be a great idea, you know, especially since, you know, it's easy just to go to get a bag of chips and some sodas with you to pack,
mm-hmm.
but learning how to pack, you know, healthy alternatives in your box or in your trailer, or, you know, wherever your RV or whatever you're taking, that would be a better option, of course.
Yeah, that's what we want to try to do is start, you know, a good, healthy meal program, you know, for Chuck Wagon, you know, that our listeners can and viewers will be able to see how we do it, how we live on there. Steve's kind of funny. He goes over to Paris, and he has champagne, and he has all the French food. So he's got a palate that we're going to have to really work to satisfy.
Hey, I for breakfast,
are you
I can
saying
do...
he drinks his dinner?
No, really. But if I have mimosas for breakfast, I'm not going to turn it down because I'm not going out there and eventing or doing anything. I'm going to sit
That's
in the
true.
Sun and have some fun. But you're 100%
right. Well, you still have to
right,
stay
though.
Healthy, too.
That's right. You're 100% right. And
right.
the idea
right.
of that equestrian, the riders, the people here, they have to maintain themselves, and they have to be fit. I mean,
right.
they can't, you know, go on binges and things like that because, first off, they can't afford to get new outfits. And
That's true.
For sure. And secondly...
You don't want to look huge on the horse.
No, you don't want to look huge on the horse. It's important, and I'm sure people want to
yeah.
hear, and that's what we're going to do, is we're going to show them, hey, if you've got your trailer, if you've got your cooler, your grill, here's easy stuff
yep.
that you can make that's going to taste good. It's going to be nourishment. It's going to, you know, it's
right.
Not 100% vegan per se, but we're even going to have some of those items available.
Right, exactly. Like for you can still enjoy your mimosa, but you know if you're going to load up on sugar, which is orange juice, you always want to
yes.
pair it with a protein that helps maintain your blood sugar, because if your sugar's going to shoot up, you're going to crash, and then you're going to be tired, and you're not going to be able to compete.
There you go. That's right. That's why I'm going to have the grill going and have my New York strip with my mimosas, and then I'll be set.
Well, Patricia,
or some nuts and cheese.
Yeah.
There you go.
Patricia, it sounds like you know a little bit about nutrition. What's your background in all this culinary activity?
Well, as I grew up, you know, riding and showing horses, I also was an athlete as well. And so my choice was either go horse riding or equestrian or, you know, continue with the athlete. I chose the athlete. I became a clinical exercise physiologist.
Wow.
So that's what I do. Now, I pretty much take from, your whole wellness, nutrition, social, psychological fitness. I'm originally from Nebraska. Living in Wellington.
If you do like bacon and eggs and sausage and toast in the morning, we're going to get corn on the cob with it?
Yes, absolutely. You always have to have a corn on the cob.
Yeah, being from Nebraska, I've
cornbread, corn on the cob. Yeah. I mean, we got corn for everything.
Yeah, I went out to race in Exarbon in Nebraska, and let me tell you something. The people were great out there. The food was just everywhere. They barbecued everything. Right. It was really good.
Oh yeah. Talk about tailgating. They're the masters.
Yeah, there you
go. That's it. That's what we need. And if it's Nebraska, then we have to have like corn chowder and stuff like that.
Yeah, there you go.
Uh-huh.
Well, Patricia, can we get you back on the 19th of March?
That would be great.
We'll kind of go over this, and we might get you on here to start helping us with Chuck Wagon.
I'd love to get together some healthy recipes. Yeah.
Yeah, get us in the right direction and everything. Do that. So if you don't mind, we're going to go ahead and start to close the show. We'll expect you back on March the 19th. We're glad to have you with us. And
we'll try to follow your
recipes and your menu.
Oh, it'll be great. Thanks, Patricia.
All right, well, I'm looking forward to it. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Love talking to you.
You're welcome. Yeah.
Okay, Scott, we're going to wrap it up for today. And when we come back next week, we'll, of course, know who won the Trotter Pacer of the Year and the Harness Horse of the Year. We'll see how the top free-for-all pacers and trotters and how they're coming along. And, for flying turns, we're going to have an update on I don't know about on the deck because I'll be in Orlando. You're going to have to scout all the horses. And we're going to need to have a talk with Tony Alagna soon and see how that Maverick is doing, the $1.1 million a year.
Right. You're exactly right about that. Now, Steve, tell us one more time where we can watch on TV live the awards.
So, Facebook Live starting at 6:30 p.m. on the United States Harness Writers Facebook page or via the United States Trotting Association page. You'll be able to hook right in Sunday night at 6:30 Eastern Standard Time.
Oh, that's great. And I want everybody to tune in next week because on At the Wire, we're going to talk with management from Churchill Downs about how they're preparing for the 2020 Kentucky Derby. It's starting to, get really focused and starting to narrow down on the top.
Yeah, Scott, I've got some questions about that, too, because my understanding is that someone like a Todd Pletcher could have 5 or 6 horses in there this year. And
exactly.
I'm curious. I need to know next week what's the record number a trainer has had horses, how many horses in the Derby.
All right. Well, maybe we can get some of our callers to answer that question for us and call in next week.
Okay, we'll get it set up.
Okay, sounds good to me. Anything else we need to touch on before we go,
Steve? No, I think we got it wrapped up.
Okay, buddy. Look forward to seeing everybody. Go to IENTV.org to see Dan Patch.
That's right. We'll be promoting that. It's a great movie, and I love watching it over and over again.
We got that right. Steve, thanks for having a good show with us today.
Okay.
Appreciate it. Thanks to Patricia.
And thank you, racing fans, Patricia, for calling in. And we'll let it go. That's a wrap.
Yeah. Thank you.